what you waiting on? Check checkers on your phone. This the Tony Sands Show, turn your radio on. Kelsey just turned down like a field goal, so we in the zone. Got games like a stadium, I'ma go ahead and pack the dome. I'm cooler, smoother, make you think with your medulla. You a student, I'ma school you with the facts that I'm producing. This is for the high schoolers, college students, nah. Everyone can do it, do this, I ain't new to this. My style is rich, it's lucrative, maneuver through it. You know it's fast only, you know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony, you could catch me every Monday at the kickoff on Sunday. I got these cold hard facts and we ain't talking Sundays. Co-host with Kelly Daly, shout out to the big homie. You know it's so sensational, like my big homie Tony. Co-hosting with Kelly Daly, you know it's facts only. You know I'm so sensational, like my big homie Tony, 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 Tony. Go BBS Radio.
We're live here in Pompano Beach, Florida. Beautiful day here in South Florida on a Saturday afternoon as college football is going on throughout the country. When I say college football, we're going to look in at some of the scores that are going on right now. We have Auburn and Texas A&M in A&M with the score of 42-20. We also have Penn State and Michigan State with that's a close score between Penn State and Michigan State with the score is 14-7. We have UMass and Mississippi State which that's a close game, probably closer than most people thought it would be. When you look at UMass and you're talking about Mississippi State who is 16th in the nation. And all of a sudden you got a UMass team that is only 4 points behind. We also got Wisconsin and Indiana squaring off. But the main game tonight here in South Florida is the University of Miami and Virginia Tech. The University of Miami and Virginia Tech. I'm going to leave the tailgate here at Ely. Listen, Ely and Dillard kickoff here in South Florida. For all my listeners that are listening around the world, Ely High School and the Dillard Panthers kickoff this night here in what we call our annual Soul Bowl here throughout South Florida. So the Soul Bowl will be kicking off here at Ely High School. But we're at the tailgate. This is the first time that Ely has set out to do a tailgate prior to the Soul Bowl. Dillard do it during homecoming. And this is one of the... You're talking about two of the oldest African-American high schools in Broward County, outside of Attucks, that is in Hollywood and Dania. We're talking about two perimeter powerhouses that are known for putting high school athletes into college and onto the NFL. But we're live here in Pompano Beach, Florida. But today, listen, we got a show that's going to steal your hearts when it comes to dealing with social issues, when it comes to dealing with what parents need to know when it comes to the new thing of National Signing Day. Everybody understand that National Signing Day starts in February. But guess what? The NCAA has allowed National Signing Day to be December 20th. That's right, December 20th. And what comes along with that being in December 20th is the fact that colleges are changing what they're requiring young men to do. You're going to hear with my main man, Ryan Bartow, that covers high school and college sports throughout the nation, the expert here on the Tony Sands Show. He is covering that from end to end. He's going to let you know the pros and the cons when it comes to National Signing Day being moved up to December 20th. So we're going to dig into that. But my main man, listen, I got a guy that's going to come here up on the Tony Sands Show after we come back from this commercial break. I'm bringing Andrew Holt. When I say Andrew Holt, when you hear his name and you think about Colin Kaepernick. He was pre-Colin Kaepernick. 2014, Andrew Hawk, Josh McCown, and three other NFL guys went before Congress to talk about some of the social issues that were affecting the black community. And when I mean affecting the black community, that's when Tamir Rice was shot up in Cleveland, and Mr. Johnson was shot in Cincinnati. And those were two of the states that my main man, Andrew Hawk, played in. And he wanted to bring recognition to some of the violence that was taking place in the black community when it came to police brutality. So he spoke out to Congress about that. Pre-Colin Kaepernick, that's 2014. Colin Kaepernick started his sit down, his kneel down in 2016. Here we are, 2017. And we're still dealing with those social issues throughout African-American communities, and when we say, well, we'll say community of color. And when I say community of color, I'm saying communities that go beyond just African American. We're talking about the Hispanic. So we talk about communities that deals with these issues. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna take a spin into dealing with that, and then we're gonna come back here on the Tony Sands Show, and my main man Andrew Hawk is gonna join the show. So we're gonna go to a quick commercial break. We're gonna play some MC Light. Doug, if you got that MC Light, man, play that MC Light. We're gonna play the MC Light, and then guess what? We're gonna dig deeper into social issues here on the Tony Sands Show that is affecting the NFL and the way the NFL is doing business. And like I told you, Andrew Hawk was prior to Colin Kaepernick. 2014, he was one of those five guys that went and sat down with Congress and stated the things that were going on. He brought attention to, he was the first person to bring attention to police brutality in the black community. So we're going to dig into that when we come back here on the Tony Sands Show. We're going to talk to my main man, Ryan Bartow, who I can't wait for him to tell you what is going on in college football and the way college football is being done, the new wave of college football. Hey, pressure? If your kid think he had pressure when National Signing Day was in February, listen to what college coaches is telling them now. Listen to what college coaches is telling them now and how they're been squeezed out of. If some of them want to take their five visits, because college guys, you know, you're coming out of high school, you get a chance to visit five different schools. Well, now guess what? If you haven't visited those five schools before December 20th and you decided you've been with the team and all of a sudden you've been holding on, say you committed to this team, and now all of a sudden, they're telling you now you better sign. But we're going to dig deep in there, and I'm going to let my main man, Ryan Bartow, tell you how that is affecting the college landscape and the way it's going. So we're going to go to a quick commercial break. We're going to play some MC Light. Doug, play the MC Light, and then we're going to come back and dig into the Tony Sands Show and the topics that are affecting our community. Stay here. Stay tuned here to the Tony Sands Show live from Pompano Beach, Florida, at the tailgate of who? The Ely Tigers and the Dillard Panthers. Stay tuned.
See, to live is to suffer. But to survive, well, that's to find meaning in the suffering.
Hey, yo, I'm slipping, I'm falling, I can't get up. Hey, yo, I'm slipping.
We're live back here in Pompano Beach, Florida, at the tailgate of the Soul Bowl here at the biggest game when it comes to the African-American community here in South Florida, the Soul Bowl. Miami has theirs, Broward County has theirs, and the one that's in Broward County is between the Dillard Panthers and the Ely Tigers. Both teams at this point are pretty much a level. Sometimes we come into this game and we have one team that is probably doing better than the other, but right now at this phase of it, both teams are pretty much, you know, along the same line. So this can be an interesting game. But as we still, like I told you, games of the week today, game day, was in Bedlam. Bedlam, that's the battle between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. And that's a big game when it comes to the Big 12 championship game and how the Big 12 is going to play out. But now, you know, you got Iowa State and West Virginia playing. And then we got Ohio State and Iowa kicking off at 3:30. So that's going to be an interesting game. But tonight's game at 8 o'clock, kicking off, West Virginia and the University of Miami playing at 8 o'clock. The Tony Sands Show will be traveling to Miami to be at that game also. So the Tony Sands Show will be covering college football over and beyond today when it comes to this great game. But I'm going to bring to you, without further ado, let's dig into my main man, Andrew Hawk. I'm going to bring him to the show. He's going to talk. And he's going to talk about some of the things that are going on in the NFL now and was going on in 2014 when he took his stand against social issues and how his career took a change then and compared to now. So I'm bringing my main man, Andrew Hawk, to the Tony Sands Show, and I'm going to let him dig into his interview as I interview him on this beautiful Saturday afternoon here in South Florida and let him tell you about his life and how his life has panned out outside of football and some of the things that might have led to his football career being a little cut short because of some of the things he did. Welcome to the Tony Sands Show. my main man, Andrew Hart. Welcome to the show. We're live here on the Tony Sands Show, coming back from a commercial break. But coming back from this commercial break, I was so anxious because, listen, when I explain what this guy is to America, what this guy meant to the NFL, his drive, his determination, his will to be successful, if you look up Webster and you look up in the dictionary, if you look up success, you will see a picture of my next guest. And when I say a picture is 1,000 words. And when I say 1,000 words, his career took him in 1,000 places. But his ultimate goal was to become an NFL player. And that he achieved. That he achieved with the St. Louis Rams, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Cleveland Browns, and with one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, Tom Brady. But without further ado, let's announce who my next guest is. My next guest is Andrew Hawkins. What's up, Drew? What's going on, man?
I'm doing good, Tony. Appreciate you having me, man.
Man, thank you for taking time out of your busy day, because now you are not playing football, and I'm seeing you when we're on Instagram, when I'm seeing you flying in the jets, you and your boys sitting back. You guys are enjoying life after football, man. I love it, because now I'm quite sure you get a chance to spend time with your son.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing for me, man. That's one of the reasons I hung up the cleats, too, because God blessed me, and it lasted more than that, man, but I was at the point where it was like, you know, I would much rather be hanging out with my boy, my son, than playing on Sundays, man. And, you know, it was a blessing, and you know, I'm just glad I'm in a happy place right now.
And, Drew, let's talk, you know, because I tell my listening audience about your career and how determined you was, how it took you all over the place. You come from Toledo, playing college football in Toledo. You get an opportunity to play CFL. But making that transition from going from college, and then all of a sudden now you accomplish a lot in college and you feel like you should get that opportunity to play in the NFL, but you take a journey to the CFL. What was your mindset when you didn't get that opportunity right out the box to go into the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a little different, man. I just felt like I knew that it was going to be tough for me, man. I'm 5'6", 5'7", and I get it. I'm not oblivious to how the NFL works. So I didn't really take it as anything bad. It was just like, okay, you look, I got to buckle down. Like, this is something I really want. If this is something I really want to achieve and I'm willing to do whatever for it, then going to play in Canada is what I had to do. And even more than that, man, Canada was a blessing to me. To get the opportunity to go play in Canada and somebody pay me to play football was a blessing. Like, it was, you know, this is all right. And half in Canada and played there for 10 years.
Listen, Drew, but then you leave Canada, and as everyone knows, you leave Canada, but then you join a reality television show called Fourth and Long, with the host being Michael Irvin. What was it like getting ready to go on this show and possibly have an opportunity to have a roster spot with the Dallas Cowboys? What was that process like? What was it like? We got a chance to see how Mike pretty much drilled you guys. But what was it like behind the scenes, how that show was playing out?
Yeah, no, it was the show was an incredible experience, right? And it's like, you know, I was at a point where, I mean, behind the scenes, we didn't have cell phones, so we weren't able to talk to our families. The only way we were able to talk to them was through letters. And it was a really trying experience, but I was willing to do whatever it took.
To get to – now, and when you said you didn't have cell phones – and I saw Mike had you guys running 110s in pads. What was that like? What was that like to be running 110s in pads? So, you know, we used to running 110s in shorts and a shirt, but to wear it running pads to run, I'm gonna tell you, because I was the one that sent him a lot of the drills that you guys used. And when I saw him using those drills, it was exciting for me because I am a trainer also, but I got a chance to see guys actually live out some of the drills that I sent to a reality television show.
Well, when I see you, we might have to throw the fist up a little bit, because you know that stuff was hard, man. And I'm not kidding. It's not only to find a player. You want to send a player there that is going to do whatever it takes. Good. The show looks good. Mike looks good. Tony Sands looks good. Spike TV. Everybody involved. But it was super hard, man. You know. I made it through, the guys that made it through, because we wanted it so hard. You know what I mean? And it was like, look, our dream is right in front of us. And I don't care how many 110s you throw at me. I don't care how many 40s. I don't care how many miles, how many bat, whatever you got to throw at me, I'm willing to take. And I'm willing to die out here in this field for this opportunity to accomplish my dream.
And, Jude, as you say, to accomplish your dreams, you come off this show, you was the runner-up behind Jesse Holly, but you get an opportunity, you go into camp with the St. Louis Rams, you play for the Cincinnati Bengals, but you really make your impact, to me, with the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like playing in Cleveland, where a lot of people don't like playing in Cleveland? What was it like playing in Cleveland and doing the things that you were stationed to do and were driven to do? What was it like playing in Cleveland?
Yeah, it was different, man. You know, I love my time in Cleveland, to be honest. It's because, you know, I played in Cincinnati, and the fan base in Cleveland, for them to be as enthusiastic as they are about their team, even though they haven't had success, even though they haven't had the winning seasons, is amazing to me. It's easy to root for, you know, Super Bowl winners. It's easy to root for, you know, perennial championship teams. It's hard to root for a team that doesn't win a lot. So from that standpoint, it was a great experience in Cleveland. Now, as a player, you know, it was challenging, only because it's like, just like I said, I mean, it doesn't have a tradition of winning, you know, but as a player, as a competitor that I am, it was awesome to be a part of the process of trying to figure that out. And like, we didn't get to figure it out. We weren't the people to do it. We weren't the teams to do it. But, you know, as a competitor, being able to wake up every day and say that you're chasing something that hasn't been done was good to me. You know, and I'm the kind of guy that loves the chase. I love the process. I'm not a person that's only going to be happy when I get to a point. Like, I wasn't just happy when I got to the NFL. I literally enjoyed the entire process of trying to prove everybody wrong. And if you're playing in Cleveland as a player, you're going to need to enjoy that process, because it's going to be a long one.
Yes. And when you talk about your Cleveland days, a lot of people, as they said, you know, you as a Brown, you was probably one of the more fearless leaders in the past 3 years when you was with the Cleveland Browns. To hear people say that about yourself and to know that you accomplished what you accomplished, that means that says a lot for your character, your determination, your drive. But in your days at Cleveland, you became you became one of the social activists and an inspiring leader to a lot of your teammates in Cleveland. What was it like taking on that role during a time when people pretty much kind of frowned upon football players becoming social activists or bringing social issues to the forefront? What was that like? Was you hesitant about doing it? Was it something that just was in you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like this. It's like, you know, we're talking about the social activism and that piece of it. Now it sounds crazy to think that it was a big deal that I spoke out on that 3 years ago, because now everybody's doing it, right?
Correct.
But
that's
the important thing. Like, whenever, you know, we all have certain gifts, we all have certain talents that'll take us to a certain level. And there's an old saying that talent will take you places that character won't let you stay. In my mind, you know, I had chased my entire life to become an NFL player. My entire life. Like, you know, I wanted to set my family up. I wanted to accomplish this dream. And when I got there, and I was having the success I was having, I was making the money I was making, in my mind, it was like, yo, there's no way that God put me in this position to accomplish this improbable 1 in 10 million chance dream for only myself. So I felt like it was my duty, while I had that platform, to hopefully give people a voice that didn't have it, or hopefully, you know, shine a light on certain issues that people didn't talk about, and pay it forward. You know what I mean? And I felt like if I did that, you know, it would come back to me. And I think it has, and I'm happy I've done it. You know, I don't know who I've influenced. I don't know, you know, that might have been the drop that started the flood of where we're at today. And, you know, some people, while they don't like it, a part of the football, and they don't want to hear about it, and they don't like to think about some of the issues that are going on in the world, you know, you have to keep in the state of mind that this is going to change a lot of people's lives outside of football. This is a conversation that is well overdue and really need to be had. So from that perspective, I'm always proud of what I've done, and I'm never going to regret it. I don't regret it. And I think the people who are going to regret it more are the guys 20, 30 years from now who had the same platform and had the same opportunities as I did, and they didn't take advantage and didn't do the things and speak out for the people that couldn't speak out for themselves when they had the chance to.
And people must understand now, this is pre-Colin Kaepernick. This is pre-Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. When you started speaking out in 2014, as you say, you wore a T-shirt doing warm-up, and on the T-shirt, it had two black names on it. It had Tamir Rice and John Crawford. And on the back of it says, the real battle of Ohio. When you say the real battle of Ohio, what did that mean once you started saying, okay, I'm going to wear this on the back of my shirt? What were you meaning by the real battle of Ohio?
Well, at the time, it was so Tamir Rice was a Cleveland 12-year-old who, you know, got shot down in a park when he was playing with a toy gun. And John Crawford was a guy in Cincinnati. He was, I think, 20 years old at the time, 19. And he was talking on the phone, and he had picked up a toy gun off the rack in Walmart, was just walking around talking to his girlfriend without any warning. You know, someone must have called and said they seen a guy with a gun. It wasn't true. It was literally off the rack of Walmart. He's not paying no attention. They rush in, and he gets shot dead. And, you know, that happened in Cincinnati. Tamir happened in Cleveland. Obviously, I had just signed over from Cincinnati to Cleveland. We were actually playing the Cincinnati that game. So it was a lot of things, and it was like, you know, this was my way of saying, okay, this is an issue. This is a problem. And this is somebody's son. This is somebody's brother. This is somebody's father. This is somebody's nephew that they're never going to see. So where, you know, we could, in the age we live in now where stories happen and then the news cycle picks up and they're out of the news in a day or two, those are issues that people are going to deal with forever. And I understand bad things happen, but if these are avoidable, if these are situations that we can put things in place to avoid people losing their lives this way, we should speak up on it, because it's not going to happen unless we're bringing light to it. And that was kind of my focal point at that point in my life. And, you know, and still, and like I said, I'm glad I did it, man. I think it kind of started a lot of conversations, and, you know, it led to some of the things we might see today.
And when you had to know, you know, speaking out and putting these names on your shirt, in spite of what had happened, you knew, was you expecting the backlash that possibly may come from people like the union president in Cleveland of the police association? Was you thinking that this backlash may down the line hurt me as endorsements or things like that? Did that ever cross your mind?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's in my nature to kind of, I'm a very meticulous thinker. I think ahead. I'm a planner. And I understood all that. I don't make decisions that I don't analyze and think through thoroughly. So I understood that. But my thing is this, and it has affected that. I mean, there's been teams that during free agency that I know didn't want to sign me because of that. There's been products that I don't want to, so there's businesses that don't want to associate with me, and that's fine. Because my thing is this, anytime you make a stance or something, anytime you draw a hard line in the sand on an issue, people are so used to public figures just playing the middle. And I understand that's what they're used to. And anytime you make a decision to draw a line in the sand and say, look, this is where I stand, as you know, like we talked about the show, I had to go through some hard things to accomplish that dream. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
And at this point in my life, if people don't want to associate me, if people, like, don't want me endorsing their products, or the reality of it, I'm chasing quality of life, Tony. You know what I mean?
So
they're actually doing me a favor by doing that. I appreciate having not to go through the process of, that makes sense.
Now, and as you say, you was on that pre-Colin Kaepernick social issues, bringing light to inner city, the relationship between law enforcement and the black community. And you had an opportunity to go before Congress. And I, as a matter of fact, I hit you on it because I saw it on television. I hit you. I said, well, that's a bad suit you got on. What was that like? You and Josh McCown, your teammate, going to Washington, D.C. to speak before Congress on these issues.
It was incredible, man. It was a good opportunity. That was, you know, that was the next step. So, you know, obviously I did the on-field demonstration, and, you know, my biggest thing, I never wanted to look like, you know, I was just all talk, which is not. I'm in my community everywhere I am. I'm in the community in Cleveland. I'm in the community in Cincinnati, back where I'm from in Pennsylvania. Any chance I get to get in the community, I do it, because it's who I am. And on top of that, you know, if I have a platform where Congress is going to let me come down there and speak to, you know, congressmen and congresswomen. And of course I'm going to take it. So I went down there. We spoke. We spoke about these issues candidly. Even behind the scenes, we're still working. You know, I think we've played a role in kind of letting some of these conversations about changes made legislatively that could really affect this in criminal justice reform and things of that issue that affect the inner city communities and will help, honestly, mitigate some of these risks for the communities and mitigate any fears that, you know, law enforcement might have and when dealing with these communities. So that's what it's about, man. It's about making our country better any opportunity we get as citizens, as American citizens born and bred on this soil. That is our duty. And like I said, I was given a platform to be able to affect that, given a platform to be able to influence that, and it's my duty to use that to the best of my ability.
And when you talk about it, and when I hear that, it always takes me back to Muhammad Ali when he made his stance on social issues in the beginning. They ousted him. They took his belt from him, took his championship from him. And as he stated, he knew that would be the outcome of that. But once he passed on, then everyone made him a hero. And not only that, but just when we talk about these social issues, and we know just this past week, Mr. McNair of the Titans made a statement stating that we cannot have the prisoners running the prison. When you heard that from wherever you was at, what went through Hulk's mind at that time?
I mean, it was just an ignorant comment, to be honest. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to sit up here like I've never said stupid things myself. But, I mean, you have to be smart enough to kind of take into account the climate that we're in the NFL, the climate of what we're talking about, the reason why the players are protesting and speaking out on these issues. And it was just an ill-placed comment that has no place in any come of it or deserved, because you just can't make mistakes like that. And for all of our actions, there are reactions. And I think some of the backlash and some of the consequences, some of the reaction from players are warranted. And, you know, honestly, I think it's going to trickle down, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
Now, and we're going to close out with this one, and I'm going to, you know, let you go. I know you got a busy schedule, but when we look at this thing and we see how it's playing out, do the guys in the NFL really, really, truly, because we see basketball players, they're always making stands and they stand out. And I know a lot of it has to do with the structure of their contracts. But do you think that NFL players really know the power that they have and the platform that they have?
Yeah, I think some of them do. Collectively, I don't know. I mean, you know, this isn't something we're talking. This is all new territory. You know what I mean? This is
correct. Yes.
You don't come to the NFL for the platform or the power. Like, you don't think about it in those terms. But here we are, and it's like this conversation is like national, and this conversation is like global, and it's such a big deal. So I think they're starting to realize that, and I think the owners are starting to make that known as well. And it's like, look, this is something we want to get figured out.
Yes.
And I feel like the only way to do that is to take the players seriously, hear them out, and really try to work towards influencing, you know, this situation, this topic in the right manner. And that's really the only way out, to be honest, in my opinion.
And people, listeners, you're listening to my main man, Andrew Hawk, here as we're on the Tony Sands Show. Hawk, and when I look at this, I'm reading up on you, man, and I'm looking at you have a master's degree from Columbia University as a 4.0 student.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
I mean,
you know, that speaks volumes. From when we got into the conversation, you say you never do anything without thinking the process through. I see why. To have a master's degree from Columbia University, you must think through, you must plan, just to even think about stepping on Columbia's University campus to get a master's degree. And then also not at that, but having a 4.0, you're thinking through a lot of things.
Yeah, man. It's like, look, we have this finite opportunity to maximize who we are. You know what I mean? I'm Andrew Hawkins, the guy who was on the couch when I seen Michael Irvin on TV talking about this reality show. And I've been given all these really cool opportunities. And in that entire process, my goal is always to be the best version of me that I possibly can. And that's whether that's socially, whether that's with my family, whether that's as a player, you know, whether that's what I'm doing in the off season as a businessman. Like, this is what I love to do. It's what we all should strive to do. And I feel like if we do that, man, you have a really good quality of life, and you can look back and, you know, hopefully, you know, with my obituary, there might be a documentary attached to it. So that'll be a cool process.
Oh, that it will, man. And you said documentary. They just released the story on me, the Tony Sands story, man, that is going viral throughout the country. They released it on American Sports Network. Then I released it on my Facebook. And to my surprise, man, right now we're at over 42,000 viewers. I'm getting places like the University of Notre Dame calling me. Then when they come down, they want me to speak to their team. Four teams on last Friday had me that played it in front of their team. So, and a lot of the guys, they talk about, you know, because I'm short and the things that I had to overcome. So I understand your journey. And that was the one thing that, you know, teams use this as motivation to get you whatever your heart desire that you want to go. You must put your foot forward and move toward it, man. Hawk, man, thank you for taking time out your day. I know this is that Saturday. You got to jump on a plane and head to Los Angeles. Thank you, man, for taking the time out your day. And you and your son continue to travel the skies, man. You continue to make progress in all these social issues, because it was you and a couple of your guys that really got this thing to moving to where it is right now. You stepped out on faith, man, and you got it done. Thank you for joining the Tony Sands Show.
Appreciate you having me, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Tony. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, buddy. Take it easy. We're live here back on the Tony Sands Show. Like I told you, you got a chance to hear that interview. And when I say that interview was out of sight, it was a pleasure for me to get him to come on my show, because he has a busy schedule. And as I told you, he's flying, getting ready to catch a plane right now to L.A. to deal with more social issues throughout America and in the NFL, as you see how this thing is playing out with Colin Kaepernick. And they're saying now that Colin Kaepernick may get signed. They're saying teams may sign Colin Kaepernick, but it took him a lot of push to get to this point. But a revelation that is turning, owners such as Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, and the Houston Texans owners, they're getting deposition to where they're going to have to wind up turning over their phone records, their emails, seeing if there's a way that they was communicating in anything with anything dealing with this situation where Colin Kaepernick thinking that he may be blackballed. But we're digging into those topics. But listen, my main man, Ryan Bartow, we reaching out to him. But I'm going to tell you, Ryan is a guy. He's been traveling. Ryan has traveled at this point over 7,000 miles to cover college football. Over 7,000 miles. Covering college football. Today it puts him in Atlanta, and he's with one of the top wrestlers in the country, the best to ever do it, the woo-woo man, the go. And listen, the man Ric Flair. You get no bigger than that when it comes to joining, hanging out with a guy like Ric Flair. We're gonna get into asking Ryan, and possibly we may get a chance to hear Ryan tell us about what it's like to be around the Golden Man. And you know, his 30 for 30 is getting ready to air coming up this week. 30 for 30 on Ric Flair, the life of Ric Flair. That's something I want to see, because I always, when I think about Ric Flair, I think about the woo-hoo, baby. Woo-hoo, baby. That's all I think about with Ric Flair. But he's coming up with my main man, Ryan Bartow, is joining the show. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Live from Atlanta, GA, baby. I am on day 41 of my national tour. I've been through 20 colleges and logged up over 8,000 miles on the rental car. This past week, I was at SMU with Chad Morris, who somehow has them bowl eligible in year three. The Ponies look to be back on strong footing there. Thursday, I was by War Damn Eagle with the Auburn Tigers. And last Saturday night, I was in Sun Devil Stadium and watched the Trojans dismantle the home Arizona State Sun Devils 48-17.
Well, Ryan, tell me, now, as you're traveling the countryside, What are some of the most interesting things that you've been seeing and people have been saying about your travels? And what are some of the things that you've seen on your journey that may stick with you for a lifetime, some of the experiences that you have experienced?
Right. Well, I think of the 20 programs I've been by, I would say the top three in terms of facilities were Oregon, Nebraska, Tennessee. The top three in terms of recruiting operations were Georgia, Clemson, Louisville. Probably the coolest things I got to experience so far were seeing the Rocky Mountains, spending a weekend in San Diego, and obviously a couple Saturdays ago getting to watch 10 hours of college football at Space Mountain with the 16-time world champion, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
And Brian, tell me that. What is it like hanging out with a guy like Ric Flair? What is that like?
Well, kind of a dream come true for somebody that grew up and is like a historian and a junkie of 80s wrestling. So you get to hear all the behind the scenes and inside stories like it was, growing up and traveling the road like he did and all the party stories with Arn Anderson and Roddy Piper and Macho Man Randy Savage. And I mean, it's a treat. And Nature Boy knows his college football. He knows the depth charts and knows a lot of coaches personally, like Harbaugh and Charlie Strong and a few others. So, yeah, he's pretty sharp in that regard.
Well, and you say he's a man that loves football. And how deep – now, I know in the NFL he's been on a lot of the – he's been on Atlanta. You catch him with the Atlanta Falcons a great deal. What is it about football that intrigues a wrestler? What is it about this game that excites the Nature Boy?
Right. Well, he's loves all athletes. He's a big LeBron James fan. Again, personal friends of Jim Harbaugh, Steve Spurrier. Every place Spurrier has been, he's been a big fan of the Gators, the Gamecocks. And I think it's something that he also did. He played at the University of Minnesota, was an all-state wrestler and football player coming out of Whalen Academy in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, about 10 minutes from my hometown. So I think it's been something that's always been in his blood, and he stayed on top of it and knows his stuff in that regard. And tomorrow, actually, before the Atlanta Falcons game, he'll be giving the pregame speech to the Dirty Birds, and he's already, prepping that with Coach Dan Quinn.
Wow, that's got to be big when you get the Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair, speaking to your team. I wonder if he still got that pizzazz of that woo woo baby in him as he used to do so well when it came to. And my I'm gonna tell you what my classic wrestling shows when I was at that time, it was the NWA with Gordon Soley. Gordon
yep.
Soley was the announcer at that time. So I'm going back some ways. So people, I am telling you my age. I'm going back some days. It was the NWA, Gordon
yep.
Soley. But my classic wrestling was between Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. You get no special than that.
Yeah, that's one of the great all-time rivalries. He's shared some of those great stories about the American dream, if you will, baby. And, it's one of his all-time great rivalries, along with, fighting Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, who he thinks is his best opponent of all time. And, it is 6:05 every Saturday night on TBS right after the Braves game. You get NWA wrestling, and you get all the best. Road Warriors, the Four Horsemen, the Garvins, Barry Windham, the list goes on.
Now, you talk about the Four Horsemen. Let me tell you what I did. One day I was sitting home on a Saturday, during the off season of football, getting ready to transition in the track because I ran track also in high school and was a star at that, not bragging, but I was a star though. And
right.
I'm sitting back watching wrestling, and I see the Four Horsemen. I think it was at that time, Bear Windham. Who else was a part of that four?
Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, and the Nature Boy.
Yeah, and listen. I'm watching them, right? As I'm watching them, I'm saying, ooh, I like that. I like that idea. Four Horsemen. I've runs on the 4x1 team at St. Thomas. I said, you know what? I'm stealing that from them. Now, I go to track practice. I say, guys, guess what we're going to call ourselves? They say, what? I said, we're going to call ourselves the Four Horsemen. And they said, what? I said, yeah, we're going to call ourselves the Four Horsemen. And I'm going to tell you, that still to this day, and that was back in 86, that still goes on at St. Thomas with their 4x1 to where they call themselves the Four Horsemen. That's big time. That's big time. So you tell Ric Flair, thank you for that. Thank him for giving me the dream and aspiration to name. And we were dominant now. We were the best in the state of Florida. So tell him I held strong and I held up and held strong when it came to that word, the Four Horsemen, because I didn't want to let the nature boy Ric Flair down. Woo-wee, baby. We're live here on the Tony Sands Show at Ely High School. I'm talking with my main man, Ryan Bartow. Earlier in the show, you got a chance to hear my main man, Ryan Hawk, talk about issues that are going on. But, Ryan, we got some issues and some things, some early dates that is going to be taking place when it comes to National Signing Day. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand that, Ryan. National Signing Day has been moved to December. So it's two signing days. Break down what it meant when I say two signing days. So my listening audience, and because I told a lot of parents this is a show that they need to listen to and understand the pros and the cons about this early signing day. So break down what it means to my listening audience when it comes to this two national signing days.
In basketball has that concept for a while, too. They do one before the season and then one after. In probably 90-95% of the top recruits sign in the early signing period. And I think that's going to be similar to this year. December 20th through the 22nd, in that 72 hours, you can sign your LOI, which means you're done. No more trips. Your recruitment is done. You are locked in with that school. And for a lot of these kids that have been, they've known where they wanted to go and they've been very, really committed for a while. That helps them and protects the school because they don't have to spend as much time on the road and resources going to see a kid every week that you know his recruitment's already done. Now, you will have some guys like the nation's top cornerback, Pat Surtain, that knows everybody will save a spot for him. He will wait till early February, to the old signing days, and do all five of his official visits and then make a choice there. And you know what? In some regards, that's good because you're going to see so much coaching change in terms of head coach, in terms of the recruiters, in terms of the assistant coaches that happens between now and the next 10 to 15 days, let alone in December. If some of these kids are locked in with a certain coach, well, he might not be there. And so that allows you, it depends, to wait until February before you make that decision. Now, the drawback of some of that is some of these places, like the Wisconsin, for example, that has 18 commits, they said all 18 better sign that day, and if they don't, they're moving on. They're moving on to their next guy. But if they don't sign, they don't feel like he's committed, so they're going to go with somebody else who can. So not every place has that power. Like Nebraska, that just got a new AD, might have a coaching change. They're not able to tell their 9 verbal commits to do the same because they don't hold that power. So it's kind of unique in each situation. This is the first year that it's ever going to happen. I think what you're also going to see is a ripple effect, like what happened at the University of Florida recently in this past week where they had a coaching change. You're probably going to see more coaching changes, whether it's Tennessee or UCLA or Nebraska, these places on the hot seat, happen earlier than they would in the past, just because now you need to get a new guy in place. You only have 3 weekends to host recruits before they can sign.
But Ryan, we're gonna go to a quick commercial break, and we're gonna come back, Ryan, and we're gonna talk about the pros and the cons when it comes to this thing, and what are some of the things you're hearing when it comes to what coaches are saying that if a kid does not sign. Stay tuned here on the Tony Sands Show as we go to this commercial break, and I'll give you the answer when we return here on the show. California. live back here at Ely High School at the Soul Bowl Kickoff Classic in South Florida, Pompano Beach, a battle between Ely High School and the Dilla Panthers. And my main man, Ryan Bartow, is still joining the show. He is hanging out with one of the all-time greatest wrestlers to ever be, the main man, Ric Flair. He is hanging out with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. But Ryan, let's get into National Signing Day issues and the things that are going on with National Signing Day. Ryan, what are some of the pitfalls that you must look out for when it comes to this National Signing Day thing?
Well, with the early signing day now, I would say of the Power 5 teams, probably of those 60 programs or 58, they're going to be probably 85 to 90% done with their recruiting with all their LOIs in the boat by December 21st. Because most of them go into the season nowadays with 80 to 90% of their verbal. Well, most of those kids will now sign. And it makes the first three weekends in December, those are bigger official visit weekends now, where in the past, it was the last three weekends in January. So I think the pro to that is you can get your recruitment done, get most of your stuff done in terms of the kid and the program before Christmas. So you're not wasting time going to see a kid 6 weeks in a row where you know he's been done since last spring or last summer. So that's going to make it accelerate the clock. Accelerate the clock more, where the month of January is going to be similar to the month of May, where it's going to be a junior evaluation period primarily.
But right now, but when it comes now, what about in February for a guy that's a two-star guy and all of a sudden his coach is telling him that he got to sign now and he wants to take his official visits? How safe is that for that kid to do?
Well, it's a roll of the dice, because you can either sign now, let's say if you're committed to a Bowling Green, or you can roll the dice if you have those Power 5 dreams and hope you get something in January. If something shakes through a coaching change, or they still have a need at a certain position. But when you do that, you risk the spot you had with that MAC school. So it's going to be a shake of the dice, and it's, I think, it's twofold. You're going to, you know, it might hurt some of those kids early on, but I think it's going to give team schools more time if they didn't get their guys December 20th and they got a couple spots left. Go back and really look at the senior film of guys, and then come January, go all out on some of those sleepers. Where that usually in the past would happen, but it would be condensed to 7 to 10 weeks. Now you're going to have a whole month to do that.
And Ryan, we're talking about, also when we talk about National Signing, how is it with this early signing period? And we're seeing some schools saying that, you know, they may let their coach go, they may hold on. Take, for instance, a program like the University of Florida, who let their coach go, McElwain go, and all of a sudden now they got recruits that's supposed to sign that was McElwain recruits, and now we got this early signing day. How does that affect the university that is in between knowing if they want to let a coach go or if they don't want to let a coach go? How does that affect their program?
Well, with the Gators right now, they're obviously will clean house, have all new assistants, so all the guys that had rapports there, they'll be at different programs. So all those guys like a Randy Shannon and Chris Rump, a Juwan Sider, a Corey Bell, big names in the state of Florida, they're going to be at other programs. So I'm sure that they'll use those built-in rapports wherever they're at to get in on some of those guys that they had committed to Florida. It also, every program, I was just at Auburn Thursday. Believe me, they were looking over the Florida commit list, because that's blood in the water right now, saying, hey, which one could we use here? Which one should we go after? We could use a corner. Maybe we should hit up all Florida's committed corners right now. And you know that Miami, Florida State, Georgia, Alabama are all doing the same thing. So that's kind of common practice for that. So in Florida's instance, whoever they hire, which, you know, it could be Dan Mullen or Scott Frost or whoever, they'll come in right after Thanksgiving, and they'll use their official, their one in-home that they get for each head coach to go and see all those committed guys and see how firm they were, see if they like them. Some of them they may not even like, And then they'll go in and try to build that rapport in a three-week window to try to salvage this class.
And you talk about early commit. You talk about committed DBs here in the state of Florida. And one name that comes up that this may affect, especially with the way things are going on now, not only with the early signing period and not only with the coaches jumping or coaches maybe fired, but we're talking about Florida State, a program that's not up on their game, but they have a top corner out of South Florida committed to them already when it comes to an Asante Samuels. How does this affect Asante in him staying committed to Florida State with the way that Florida State, because I'm hearing some rumors that, hey, a lot of teams now are starting to push forward, being that Florida State is not having the banner season that Florida State is used to having.
Right. I mean, they're having their worst season. They're on deck to potentially have the nation's longest streak of going to consecutive bowls snapped. It probably is going to be snapped. So teams are looking at that, even though they won't make a coaching change there, and they'll probably have a lot of assistants like go. They view that as if there is a coaching change because they're struggling 2-5 right now, hanging on against Syracuse. We'll see how that one winds up. But they go and look at those guys like South Carolina did, who's 6-2, and then you try to convince a guy like Asante Samuels, hey, use one of your 5 official visits, come on campus, give us a look, give us a try. And they did that, and they won't be the only ones that get an official out of Asante. I'm sure plenty of other programs are doing the same, Louisville, Auburn, et cetera. So he'll probably do 4 or 5 of his officials and have a busy month of December, which will kind of coincide on, you know, which should be a pretty lengthy playoff run for his high school team as well. So, yeah, you see it on both sides, not only coaching changes, but struggling teams as well.
Thank you. Right, listen, man, we're live here at the Ely High School, man. We're at a tailgate party with the battle between Ely High School and the Duluth Panthers, which I tell my listening audience all across the country. This is one of the biggest rivalries of inner-city black schools here in Broward County. Dade County has this. Broward County has this. This brings out pretty much a lot of the minority community comes out because these are two of the oldest schools, black schools here in the inner city. Tell me this now. There's some big games going on. Let's break a couple of these down right quick before we go off the air. We got Bedlam, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma. Give me your pick in that game.
Mike Gundy, I think he's done a great job. He's wide open offense, and Oklahoma is known for, you know, many letdowns and upsets, and I like the Cowboys in that one.
Well, let's look at now, and we're talking about here in South Florida, a game that I'm leaving here, gearing up and heading down to cover, is the University of Miami and Virginia Tech. And how important it is the game here to the University of Miami, and who do you see winning this game?
Right. Well, this is the biggest game Miami's had in a long time, because if you win this, then you're finally, for the first time ever, going to play in the ACC title game. And it's at home, big crowd. This is why you go to the University of Miami. Now, obviously, Virginia Tech, with one of the, you know, maybe the second best defensive coordinator in the country, Bud Foster, going against Mark Richt's play calling, that's advantage Hokies. And Hokies are coming in, a hotter team, probably more confident team, where Miami has kind of skated by the last few weeks, barely beat a very good North Carolina team, needed a lot of luck to beat Florida State and Georgia Tech. Eventually, that'll get caught up. And I'm going to say probably the Hokies, 27-20.
27-20. Ryan, I'm going to have to go against you because I am, deep Hurricane. So I'm going to flip that, and I'm going to go to Hurricanes 21, Hokies 14 here in South Florida. We're live. Ryan, man, hey, tell the nature boy, Ric Flair, woo-wee, baby, the golden boy, the best to ever do it when it comes to the wrestling scene. He has opened and made wrestling what it is today in this modern-day era of wrestling. He is one of the guys that was instrumental in taking the NWA to the WWF and the W whatever it is now. He is the guy. The Hall of Famer when it comes to that. And, man, I'm quite sure that 30 for 30 is going to be a bomb.
Right, Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, ESPN. It's going to be one of the best 30 for 30s. I encourage all our listeners to watch the life of one of the true American treasures, the jet flying, wheeling, dealing son of a gun, the Nature Boy.
The Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Right, man, we're closing out here. We got to head down to the University of Miami game. What are some of the games you're going to be watching across the landscape of college football?
We got right now Clemson and NC State. And then tonight we're going to watch Alabama absolutely roll LSU and then watch that Hurricanes and Hokies game. And it should be a great day. I always say you get 12 college Saturdays a year, and those are the 12 most special days of the year.
Man, listen, tell the Nature Boy, one day I want to bring the Nature Boy on and let him pick one of the biggest – let him come on and pick one of these top-notch college games and give us his intake on what he think and where he think the Atlanta Falcons is going to go when it comes to the NFL. How far will they go this year? So you tell the Nature Boy, one day we got to get the Nature Boy on the air here.
You got it, buddy. Have a great weekend. Talk to you when I get home on Wednesday.
Take it easy. Yeah. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
That's my main man, Ryan Bartow. He's traveling the countryside, as he tell you. He's been over 7,000 miles across this country from one end of it to the other and bringing you, my listening audience, everything that you need to know when it comes to college football and high school football. As he told you, my main man, Andrew Hawk, joined the show earlier. Ryan Bartow joined the show, and you got a chance to hear it from the pros all the way down to the college and high school. We're signing off here at the Soul Bowl tailgate party in Pompano Beach, Florida. Tonight, I'm going with the Dillard Panthers in this game here. I'm going to choose Dillard. We're signing off. Listening to all the stay tuned each and every week to the Tony Sands Show as we close out this show. Until we talk to you next week, peace, love, and guess what? Stay safe.